the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Dee Reddy, John Cadell with us for our weekly music discussion. Dee, why have Kasabian left without a lead singer?
Kasabian are left without a lead singer. They announced on Monday, that he was leaving the band due to personal issues. And unfortunately, it came to light earlier today that the personal issues were a bit more than that. He's actually admitted to assault and has been charged on his ex-fiance. Pretty grim sounding case, Matt. There was actually a child who witnessed it, who called the police. She was injured, not badly injured, but enough to warrant an 18-month community order and 200 hours of community service as well. He's also been required to complete 5 days of rehabilitation and ordered to pay a £90 victim surcharge. As well as that, though, there's a lot of people who have kind of cast a bit of an unfavourable view of the band themselves for how they announced it. When it was announced that he was leaving for personal issues, a lot of people obviously commenting on social media that they were sad to see him go, and then to find out only 24 hours later the real reason behind it, they possibly could have come down a bit harder on him than they did. But yeah, that leaves them with just two of the original members, because of course Chris Karloff left back in about 2006 now, I think it must be.
So I wonder, John Cadell, will people listen to Kasabian music now, knowing this about the now ex-lead singer?
It's hard to know, Matt. It's the age-old question of how do you separate the artist from the art, and do you separate the artist from the art? I don't know is the short answer. With regard to Kasabian's announcement, I don't know if they were at liberty to say anything else, given that it would be before the courts the following day. I think there's...
Although he did plead guilty, didn't he?
He pled guilty today. He did, yes. He said he's ashamed. He initially said that it didn't happen until he was shown video footage of it happening. And then he went, okay, yeah, I admit it, I did it. I don't know. There had been rumours, and there are only rumours, that he was suffering from a number of addictions in the months and years leading up to this. But suffice to say, he took his issues out on his ex-fiance and is now paying the price. He has no band anymore. He will certainly, as the judge said, he has certainly let down people who love his music, and that his fans will be shocked about what he did. And I think Kasabian as a band, or as a commercial concern, if indeed they still are a band, they had no choice but to sever ties, I think.
Okay, let's move on to somebody who's going to be very much missed by his many fans, particularly here in Ireland, where I think he has played on a number of occasions. Ennio Morricone, as the Italian composer who's written some of the best movie music of all time. Let's hear one of the first bits, the theme song from the 1966 Western, The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. The importance, John, of brilliant music with a good movie.
You just actually just took the words out of my mouth, Matt. I was just about to say that, you know, Ennio Morricone is living proof of the importance of the soundtrack to films in general. I mean, you think of The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, and what immediately pops into your head is that picture of Clint chewing on the cigar and the music. You think, when you think of the film, the first thing you think about is the music. And all the best musicians and all the best film scorers, if that is indeed a term, realize that the music is integral to the best films. You know, if you have a classic soundtrack, it also elevates the movie. You think of the likes of Star Wars and John Williams, Cinema Paradiso, which I think was Ennio Morricone's as well.
You know, we have a bit of music from that in a moment,
and it's stitched into your experience of the film. If the music is good, it elevates the film, and Ennio Morricone was a master.
Let's actually hear a little bit of the music from one of the greatest movies ever, Cinema Paradiso. So different to what we just heard before, Dee, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the magic of his music. As John was saying, it's just so stitched into the cinematic experience. And he actually spoke to this himself when he received his Lifetime Achievement Award for an Oscar, where he said, you know, behind every great soundtrack, there's a wonderful movie, or something to that extent. But his ability to cross genres in his soundtracking is really something else. What's lovely about that particular piece that you just played is he actually wasn't originally available when he was asked to do the music for Cinema Paradiso, but his old friend Franco Cristaldi was the producer on it and gave him the script to read. And by the time he got to that really famous scene of the montage of screen kisses, he just dropped his previous commitment and said he had to come on board and do that one. And he actually worked with his own son in composing that music, which is a kind of nice little touch when you think about the story of Cinema Paradiso itself.
Okay, and there's one other bit of music. I'm trying to remember. I remember a friend of mine, Donna Galway, many years ago buying a really expensive TV and sound surround system back in the era where I'm not sure if even DVDs were out at that stage. It might still have been VHS. But he loved the movie The Mission, and he loved everything about it, the visual effects, but particularly the music. And let's hear Gabriel's Oboe from that movie from 1986. Yes, John, that is epic music, isn't it, for an epic movie?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I must admit, I've only just actually gotten classical music after years of being very cynical about it, not least on this show. But yeah, I have a new appreciation for classical music and classical music arrangements. And yeah, it's just he was the maestro. That's what he was known
which
as.
Which often work magnificently with movies. Maybe one of the ways of keeping classical music alive is actually using the full orchestras for doing the big scores for the big movies.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, if you want something to sound epic, get an orchestra behind it. You know, if you're sweeping valleys and hills, just get a string section and Bob's your uncle. It's not as simple as that, of course. The old me would have thought it was. But yeah, I mean, like nothing's sounds.
The new post-lockdown John Cadell, is it?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, I think I've just probably matured a bit, Matt.
It took its time. Anyway, let's get your picks of the week. Dee, what's your pick of the week, please?
My pick of the week this week is Margot Price's third album, That's How Rumours Get Started. The song that I've chosen from it is Stone Me. I absolutely love Margot Price, so I've been really waiting for this one to come out. And it was put back because of the COVID-19 situation. So it's one of many now that we're starting to see trickle out finally. But this is a gorgeous, gorgeous track. I just feel there's something very modern that she brings to country and Western music, even if Nashville don't like it so much.
People you love, but I won't forget what it's like to be.
That is Margot Price. That's How Rumours Get Started is the album. Stone Me is the song. So, John, what's your pick of the week, please?
I'm delighted and very excited about the return of Rufus Wainwright. His new album, Unfollow the Rules, is out on Friday. There's a bit of a 70s soft rock Laurel Canyon vibe off it. And we're going to hear a bit, I think, of Damsel in Distress.
Right, has a 70s vibe, but nothing wrong with that, is there, John?
Not at all. I mean, Rufus is he's something of a magpie. He also wrote an opera and he was fluting around with musicals as well. But he's sort of back to what I'm going to call the day job, which is he's just a great, great melodist. Release the Stars, if people don't know it, from 2007, is still in my top 20 albums of all time. And it's just great to see him back at what I'm calling the day job.
Now, Dee, would you be a fan of Spandau Ballet and the Kemp Brothers?
Somewhat. I mean, who doesn't love a bit of 80s cheese? I presume you're asking me this because of the documentary or mockumentary, yes, rather, that came out on Sunday night. So I guess to put the doc, it's called The Kemps, all true. It came out on BBC on Sunday evening, but definitely worth watching again. To put it in context, though, you kind of need to have seen Brass After the Screaming Stops, which came out in 2018, which was this truly sublime but very, very true documentary they made with the Brass Brothers. And what they've done for this is it's kind of somewhere between After the Screaming Stops and This is Spinal Tap. So it's a very knowing mockumentary of two aging pop stars being sent up by a documentary crew. It's a bit of crack, to be honest. It's definitely
funny
worth
as
checking
hell.
Out.
It's it so is, funny.
Yeah.
I have to give the obligatory language warning for the clip that we're going to play, in which Martin Kemp talks about his new film project.
So you're very excited about your new film project. Can you tell us anything about it?
What I'm trying to do is emulate the DC, Marvel, kind of Star Wars universe, you know, by creating the gangster universe. Al Capone comes back from the dead and he assembles this crack British team of hard British bastards from history, and they robbed the crown jewels during the Blitz. It's called The Hardest British Bastards of the Galaxy.
That is a good idea.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm writing it, directing it, producing it, and Gary and me, we're going to be starring in it as the Kray Twins.
Oh, that's good.
Because there's no women in it, what I'm going to do is reboot Jack the Ripper, right? You know, like they did in Jumanji?
Yes.
Right? Reboot Jack the Ripper, come back as Jackie the Ripper.
Right. And who's playing Al Capone?
Bob Hoskins.
Right. And is the film financed yet?
Well, almost, you know. I mean, we're crowdfunding it. That's the way that all the best films are financed these days.
Yeah, yeah. So how much have you raised so far?
Let's have a look. £202.50.
That's good.
Yeah.
And what's the goal?
15 mil.
And Guy Ritchie is going, that's my idea they're stealing.
Take my money, I would watch
point
that
out
film.
Shirley Kemp steals the show. Martin Kemp's real-life wife also... one half of Pepsi and Shirley, but her scene with Martin describing in the documentary, he's married to Pepsi and Shirley, and just the exchange between them is just genius. She steals the whole documentary. She's great.
Okay, so that's highly recommended. You can probably get that off the BBC player. That's all we have time for. Thank you very much, Dee Reddy and John Cadell, for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.